Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a blowout, but like you in a swimming pool, Tony, I'm a stander. And maybe I'm down an eyeball, but I see things from a different angle. I see Texas being too confident, celebrating early with a team meal in Houston at a restaurant that boasts a one-star review on Yelp, the thick chick. And let me tell you something, just before tip-off, those spicy buffalo sandwiches they've feasted on are not sitting well. Let's just say it severely affects their defecatory behavior.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
And in response to that from Mark Graff at Hill Air Force Base in Utah, the best Oscar from March Madness bracket segment goes to Greg Garcia.
Yes, it does.
He's not winning, though. He had UCSB. They're out in the first round. He's not winning.
No.
Phil's mom's not winning. She had Marquette, right?
That was a tough one.
She's not winning.
She's near the bottom, along with Jason Lockenfora and son.
Yeah.
The great Zucchini is rounding out the cellar.
I think Jason's son had Maryland winning it all.
Yeah.
They're so. Out.
But I love that Jason buries his son by putting in parentheses and son.
Right? No, he said it.
Big Maryland fan.
He said it in, but he said, my son filled this out for me.
They're getting ready for
opening
day.
Who's winning at the moment? Do we know?
Currently, we have Spike Braun.
Okay,
of course.
Leading. Well, he has a girlfriend now. And right. Gary in second.
Oh, that's great.
The Braun's.
Yeah.
My thanks to Patrick M. Rayer for the information about Lee Corcoran. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. So, there's a couple of things I want to get to. On my phone yesterday, or 2 days ago, or 3 days ago, or 4 days ago. It doesn't matter because it comes on a very frequent basis. On my phone is a notification from CVS that I can get COVID tests, at-home COVID tests for free.
Rapid tests, yes.
Yeah, they're phasing these things out as we go from pandemic to endemic in someone else's eyes, not mine. But they're phasing these tests out, and so you can get some. It says you can get some. So I go to a CVS yesterday morning. Now, I make this mistake, and it never even occurred to me. I should have gone to Evelyn's CVS.
Oh, right.
I should have gone to the CVS inside the Target.
Yes.
Where they across have been, from the Whole Foods.
They have been so nice to me over a long period of time, and I never even thought about it. And I went to another CVS, and that will be nameless or directionless. I won't say where it was. First of all, I walk in there, and the pharmacy is closed. At 10 in the morning. It's closed. Not going to open, the guy tells me, till 11. Even though the sign above the pharmacy says Sundays 10 to 5.
It's not off to a good start, is it?
Okay. So then I come back. I go out. I get some stuff. I come back about 5 to 11. I see a woman. I walk to the pharmacy. I see a woman standing to my left. So I go, okay, she's first. And I figure I'm second. At 11 o'clock, the gates go up. It's like all paramutual betting is stopped. The gates go up. And the woman walks to the counter because she's picking up medicine. And all of a sudden from behind her, a guy shows up. And he looks at me to his right. And he says, there's a line. I said, well, how would I have known that standing here, over here? He goes, there's a line.
This is a classic CVS setup.
There's a line.
Yeah.
I feel okay. Okay. I go behind him. I don't like him. But I feel, okay, this could be legitimate. Then a woman gets behind me, and then some guy, my age, if not older, starts wandering around. He's wandering around. He passes all of us. Now, at this point, the woman in front is picking up stuff. I don't want to pick up. I have to talk to somebody.
Sure.
And the guy who was in front of me in a black jacket, he's up talking to her. Okay, that's legit. When he's done, the wanderer, as Dion would call him, the wanderer goes right up to the woman who's the pharmacist. And I look at this guy. I'm about 15 feet away. And I'm like, I'm amazed by this. He takes some stuff out of his hands, pill jars. And I walk up to him and I go, there was a line. What are you doing? And he says to me, I've got the wrong pills here. I need to change pills. I said, change it from behind the line. I'm an inch away from hitting this guy in the head. He's my age at least. I can take him down. But he moves to the back.
Okay.
I go up. She asks me a couple of questions. I don't get them then and there. She asked my age. She asked my birthday. She says, have you ever been in a store before? I go, in my life, yeah. I don't even know what that means. But I believe now that I probably haven't gotten prescriptions from there. I get almost all of my prescriptions from Brookville Pharmacy.
Right, that's right.
So I believe I may not very well be in their log. And I believe I'm not going to get these tests. I'm not going to get them. So I'm going to go to Evelyn at some point and say, help me out.
At least if you go to Evelyn, you can ask her, how do I get into the system so that I'm eligible for these tests? Because once you're in any CVS, it's easy to transfer prescriptions from one pharmacy to another.
So it just, I mean, this...
Now to reset
this... He says, I need to change these pills. What?
Okay,
there's a line.
Okay, but look at it from his side. You are in line for pickup.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah,
I was in the only line.
Okay, but that is on the pickup side. This is the problem with the CVS system. Mm. These aisles are perpendicular to the counter, and one is for drop-off, one is for pickup, and they normally have more than one pharmacist working.
I tend to default to, if there's a line, I think you should get to the end of the line. Yeah.
And if I specifically said to this fellow, there's a line.
Yeah.
I just can't believe you let him get ahead of, how did he get position?
He just...
This is like a merge.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wandered. He just wandered up there before the other guy was walking away. He just stood behind the guy in the black.
I'm going to say that this fellow knew what he was doing and was just trying to nonchalant his way up to the front of the line. So I would have been agitated.
He came close to being on the floor.
So my bigger issue with that CVS and this setup in general is the line then extends through the aisle. So let's say you're trying to actually just shop the aisle.
Right.
You can't because there's normally 3 to 5 people deep.
Yeah. You're right. And also, why are they opening at 11 if the sign says 10?
Oh, just wait till you get to the CVS pharmacy lunch break.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, they specifically say that 1:30 to 2.
Yeah, that's always
fun. I understand
when you show up for that. And by the way, I'm also sort of agitated at when the first guy who said, hey, there's a line here, it was just you and him, right? There was nobody else in a line at that point?
I didn't know because I wasn't in that line. I was in the next aisle.
Yeah, but then when you got directly behind him, right? Yeah, see, that guy at that point he said, hey, I thought there was a line over here. It's not like there's a line of 12 people.
I felt that he had legitimacy.
Okay.
I felt the other guy had no legitimacy.
To try and bring up the line and where it starts, that is the burden of being at the front of the line. And it's different than, say, the self-checkout at a Safeway, where you know the line's going to move. It's going to open.
Right.
A pharmacy, you could be asking questions for 10 minutes.
Yeah, there's always somebody.
Another thing that happened, as I was parking in the parking lot near this CVS.
That's a very narrow parking lot.
Oh, if I think I know the one that this is, yes.
As I was parking in that, I saw, for the second time in my life, a car that I had never seen before. One I have passed while walking the dog, and one parked about 20 feet away from me. There was a woman in the car with a young child. She was on the phone, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. When she got out of the car, she said, excuse me, what kind of car is this? I have to describe it. It's like a Range Rover. It's boxy like a Range Rover, but bigger than a Range Rover, about the size of a Yukon. Not as big as a Suburban, but about the size of a Yukon. It's a big automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And its name is Rivian, Rivian. I said, what is that? And she said, oh, this is a Rivian. I said, well, what is that? She says, is it made in America? She said, it's an all-electric vehicle. That she's got. I said, is it made in America? And she said, it's actually made in Normal, Illinois, which is, I believe, the birthplace of Dave Kindren, Normal, Illinois. And it's boxy. It's not sleek, but it's attractive looking.
It's sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever seen one?
I for the first time last week driving down our street.
You saw one?
Yeah. It looks like an old Wagoneer.
Yes. Yes, it's called Rivian. It's apparently a brand new car coming. This probably goes, so I looked at her and I went 50, 60, and she says a little bit more than that. And there was a but involved, you know, because she felt there was value to it. And she felt she was going to have it for a very long time. You never heard of it.
No, I've never seen
Rivian.
One of these.
Michael, you've heard of it.
Just because I saw it, but that is, I would guess, so I just pulled it up. I've not seen the
MSRP.
Sort
of looks like a Bronco,
which
too.
Is now just whatever the dealership wants to make up, but I would guess at least 90.
Oh, I didn't.
That's a big car.
Yeah, I didn't ask for the price, but I mean, she was, saying that
I love
she
the,
liked
the
it.
Freedom that you have to just approach people.
Yeah,
in
no,
a parking
you tell
lot.
Me that's a terrible thing to do. I kept my distance and from
a
distance
nothing like
away,
a mom alone with a kid in a parking lot having you just.
I didn't walk up.
Meander over after getting into a fight at CBS.
I didn't walk up. I did not walk up. No, this is before the fight. This is before the fight. That's why I'm standing outside. I just said, excuse me, like that. Can I ask about your car? That's, you know, because it's the second one I've seen.
Yeah, and you're not asking, like, can I see your driver's license? Do you have proof of ownership?
No.
Were you on your phone?
No.
Yeah. By the way, I'm looking at the price right now. Yeah, Michael, you're pretty much on it.
Okay. 90?
Yes. Yeah.
A lot
well,
of money.
For the limited edition, that's $110,000.
It's a lot of money, but I, you know,
looks
it's all
nice,
electric.
Though. Yeah.
Do they get the designated parking like the Teslas?
I didn't see anything that said Rivian because it's only the second Rivian I've ever seen.
I've never
Does it
seen
say
that.
It's made in America in Normal, Illinois? Was she correct about that, I assume? Luke came by last night.
Luke.
Luke came by with his book, the beautiful cover. From behind, Luke, it looks like Sedona or someplace like that.
Oh, yeah,
and
look at that.
And it's from behind, and it says, look for me there, grieving my father, finding myself Luke Russert. I started to cry when I read it, very quickly started to cry. But it was so nice to see Luke, and I brought Luke. I said, Luke, when you're ready, you can be on the show. And he basically said, I'm ready today. Because Luke likes to be on the show. Luke likes to talk. It was great to see Luke. Happy about that.
It's been over. So this book has been in the writing for many years. And for me, we are the same age. I mean, Luke
That's
toured
right.
me through St. Albans when we were in sixth right. grade. But to see the evolution from the sort of the photos and the blog style entries, these very personal looks into his travels, and then to see how that writing became a little bit more structured, a little bit more poignant. I remember some series he was doing through Alaska to then see this product. It's really amazing.
Luke will tell you, you know, what's on his... He'll, if you sit down with Luke, you're
going
to listen for a while.
Yes.
Luke's ready to go, yes. And he's ready to tell you to cut open his soul, right? I mean, that's what he does. That's okay. That's fine. So I was watching the golf yesterday in between the basketball games.
Which golf?
Now, I watched Liv one time... For about 45 seconds, I saw a woman interviewing Phil Mickelson and some other guy. They were wearing team shirts. They were talking about their team. I had no interest in their
so
team.
So that's the High Flyers, not the Firecrackers?
I think they're the Firecrackers.
Or the Fireballs?
Fireballs or something like that. I had no interest
Great
in their team
fire.
At all. And they wouldn't tell me who was winning the tournament. They wouldn't tell me. I thought maybe there was a playoff.
Well, there's tournaments within the tournament.
I just... Couldn't follow it and didn't care about it.
There's a lot of moving things on the screen.
Yeah, I didn't care about it. So I went over, I stayed with the other one because I thought Jordan Spieth was going to win. Jordan Spieth made two great shots. He made a birdie on 12, right?
Yep.
Or was it 14?
14, maybe.
He made a birdie on 14. He made a great sand shot on 15. Great sand shot to save par on a par 3. And then on 16, just as, and I'm not exaggerating, just as Paul Azinger or Brad Faxon, I don't know which one, so I can't tell them apart because you don't see them, said this is the only tough shot left on the golf course. It was the tee shot on 16.
16. Par 4, K-pole around the water.
They say this. It's the only tough shot left. Jordan Spieth tees it up, hits it, shakes his head, looks over to the right, and plop in the water.
Ball, Michael.
He loses the tournament.
No, that the crazy thing about Spieth is he doesn't actually lose the tournament. Well, he makes a 12-footer for bogey.
Yeah.
And he then proceeds to hit a
four iron
from about 225 to 12 feet. The best shot of the day on a par 3. And you think Jordan Spieth's going to do Jordan Spieth things. He makes the unbelievable happen. No, it's a weak putt. It doesn't even get to the hole.
Yeah.
This is on the low side.
So I'm watching Adam Schenck. You know, the aptly named Schenck. Like, you can't...
And if your last name is Schenck and you're getting to the 72nd hole and you're hitting it opposite hand against a tree, yeah.
Schenck-o-potamus. And he's got the great story in the tournament because his wife is 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh. And she's walking around. You know, and it's a lovely story. And he screws up on 17 as well.
What? But he makes a 25-footer for par. So he's made both Schenck and Spieth are going back and forth with some big putts. He has a bad bunker shot, but makes the putt, and then proceeds to hit his tee shot against a tree. Righty has to play it lefty, and that's where you think, oh, the gallery is in play.
Yeah. And a guy who wins, a guy wins it. He should. The guy who won it should have had to be in a playoff.
You'd
he
think.
Wasn't in the playoffs. It didn't have that.
He was working on the range
His
expecting
name is
a playoff.
Taylor Moore. I don't know who he is. And I missed the end because I took the dog out. Well, I missed the absolute end.
You sort of thought it was going to go to playoff, and you thought you'd have another 30 minutes.
Yes. I thought there'd be a playoff, and so there I'd be back, and I'd be able to watch it. I missed it, and I missed the live playoff, the sortie tour, as I like to call it. I missed their playoff.
So I went back to it because, again, by being on TV, the best thing to happen to them is, on my at least my cable system, they're one channel away from the PGA Tour broadcast.
That's
so you just go up or down.
803.
We were on the phone at this point because the boys were watching Wildcrats, and I go back to it as last channel, and it honestly looked like a bit from Arrested Development where they're on a podium with, like, firework sizzlers in the front, in the foreground that begin to sizzle out as they're playing music from a couple years ago.
Was there a lot?
Everything just felt so dated.
I didn't see any crowd there. Was there a big crowd?
No,
it was in Tucson. It was in the United States. Right, Usually it's in Thailand.
It is in a golf hotbed, and I was thinking about this. Like, I'm not supporting this tour for a few reasons, but I want to see how it turns out, but I would be hard pressed not to go if I lived there, because I would say it's interesting to see some of these
players.
Get
to see Phil. Get to see Brooks Koepka. Get to see Dustin Johnson.
Like
sure.
To follow Koepka right now after the tortured window into his life from Full Swing would be interesting for an hour or two.
So anyway, that's all I've got. If you've seen a Rivian or if you've got a Rivian, you can email us, and then maybe somebody can write a book about stories out of the Rivian.
Sure.
We can do that.
That would be lovely.
Not
stories
Riviera.
From the CVS?
Yes.
You didn't even get to use your 5-cent coupon.
I had everything with me. And I got, I don't know.
Didn't even get the test.
I got slandered.
The expired test.
I heard words I never heard in the Bible. Michael Wilbon will return on Tony Kornheiser.
You hear that? Your dog knows. Spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes to us from PJ, who writes, a few years ago, you played one of my songs called This Love of Mine. Is this the song?
Yes.
This Love of Mine. Which I had written to mark my first Valentine's Day with my former girlfriend, Lizzie. What I didn't mention at the time was that Lizzie is Rufus Peabody's sister. And admittedly, former girlfriend's probably an odd way to describe her since 2021, she became the woman to whom I now related by marriage. She's actually a podcaster like you, though. Her show doesn't stink. In fact, her show, Side Door, is the flagship podcast of the Smithsonian. It's a good gig, even if she does get fewer free sneakers than you do. Anyway, I'm hoping the connective tissue of the show could help out my other brother-in-law, Tom Peabody. Tom's playing a small tour through the Southeast in early May. He's looking for connections to venues and other musicians willing to share the stage in Richmond, Chapel Hill, Charlotte, and New Orleans. Anyway, we'll get to that on the next song. But this is the first song, and this is called This Love of Mine. And this is PJ.
It's beautiful.
Who is Rufus Peabody's brother. Rufus Peabody.
Connected to everyone.
We got to call Ma and say, do you know this about the guy? They play in Michael Wilbon. Let's start with the overview, which I'm sure will be the opening question on the PTI show today, which is, I'm sure it'll be this. Not what is the biggest surprise to you, but what is the biggest takeaway from four full days, you know, from the first two rounds already?
This is what we thought it would be.
Yeah.
I mean, there were plenty of forecasts, and any forecast that didn't just had chalk teams moving ahead was stupid and not paying attention to what college basketball has become. And it was moving this way anyway. It's been moving in this direction for 30 years. But now with the transfer portal and name and likeness. I mean, kids, every school, you put up a sign in the front yard, and you can get probably 2-4 stars to come play for you. If you can make people think they should come play for you and you can be on TV, and the kid can also make some money, how about some of these commercials? How about the AT&T Curb commercials, national TV commercials with Kentucky players? And it's interesting, or at least one player, it's interesting that they're not wearing blue and white, but they do have the logo. I don't know what is what there, but so you have a condition now where anybody can beat anybody, and it doesn't matter if you're Power 5 or, you know, the Ivy League has as many teams in the Sweet 16 as the Big Ten. And so this is what we've got. It's not, and it's just going to be more and more this way. It's going to be more spread out. I think so. Of the Sweet 16 schools, 11 are from different conferences.
So this is, yes, this is the undeniable takeaway. In years past, let's take a normal year. Let's say 10 years ago. Let's go back 10 years. When you got to the Sweet 16, at least 11, maybe 12 or 13 of those teams were top 4 seeds. You could count on that. And those top 4 seeds were invariably from, as you're saying, Mike, Power 5 conferences. That's not true now. It's just not true. You don't get as many, and they are not concentrated in Power 5 conferences anymore. It's right. It's just different now.
Yeah, and they're not the blue bloods who are out. And this is the way it is. This is the way it is, and this is the way it's going to be. Unless there's some cataclysmic change in the fabric of,
I agree with this,
of college basketball. So and it doesn't even matter whether people like this or not. Or this is it. This is what you got.
Yeah.
And so it's just what the games themselves are the attraction, and I think that part is really good. The games are the attraction. And you discover, you see a player, and you go, where'd this kid come from? How this kid is really good, you know.
The under 6 foot kid on Kansas State.
He's really good.
That kid's really good.
But there's a lot of them. There's a Penn State kid who's like 6'4", 6'5", and he plays like Adrian Dantley used to. Nobody listening now has any idea what I'm talking about.
No.
And he's like 6'5", and he can get anywhere he wants on the basketball court, and that's how Penn State almost stayed alive to this point when you thought a few weeks ago, what if they can't make the tournament? And then I told you I was looking forward to just finding out I want to know who can play. These individual players who can play. And there's one guy who's been around for forever, and it didn't take name and likeness, and it didn't take transfer portal. And it's Drew Timmy.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I can watch Drew Timmy play every night like a pro. And the conundrum is, can he be a pro? He'll be a pro somewhere, and he'll make a roster at least for it. But it's very undecided as to whether or not people think he is worth even a first-round draft pick in the NBA. And I think he may be the best player in the field. I don't mean the most talented. I just mean, like, if I was choosing up shirts and skins right now, and I got to go with some people I know and I can get a scouting report on, I'll take Drew Timmy. But it doesn't even mean he can play next year.
I don't know. How did Northwestern do, in your opinion? I understand they lost, but how'd they do?
Great. Yeah. Great. We played UCLA dead even.
Yeah.
What else were we supposed to do? We played a 2 seed. We were a 7. UCLA's a 2, and those seedings were probably about right. We played them even. The game was, we had a shot in the air to tie the game at 60 with less than a minute to play and missed the 3, and, you know, they hit free throws, and so it was a 5-point ending. But we play UCLA. We play with guile and smarts, and I'm hoping that some kids who are real recruits and transfer eligible kids will pay attention to what we've got going on in Evanston. I texted our AD, Derek Gregg, yesterday and just said, proud, 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 proud.
Good for you. Good for Northwestern.
That's what I did. I didn't text Chris because I'm going to call him, Chris Collins, Big Ten Coach of the Year. Chris Collins, I'm going to text Chris. I'll call Chris later today. And we had UCLA on the ropes, man. UCLA on the ropes in California. So I'm told the building was electric, and obviously UCLA had more people than we did. But in terms of fans, but we had a, you know, we won a game. We never trailed in the game we played against Boise. We led. I think there was two ties. We led wire to wire essentially, and then UCLA. We play. We're down 16 and tied UCLA. So I got no, you know, I got no complaints about what we did.
There is one thing as we talk about how the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness has changed everything, and it is, it has. But there's one thing that's still good. Tom Izzo in March gets to the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
He sometimes goes further, but Tom Izzo in March knows what he... There was two great coaching jobs that I saw. Rick Barnes did a great job with Tennessee, getting completely physical with Duke, understanding that in the ACC, and Rick Barnes knows the ACC well, in the ACC, teams aren't physical. And they beat Duke. They out-physical Duke. And Tom Izzo looked at Marquette and said, we can beat this team. We can bump this team. We can get them off their rhythm. They're a rhythm team. And he beat them. Those two guys, right, Mike, did a great job.
There were a lot, Tony. There were a lot. And in fairness, I didn't watch anything else. I sat in front of a 3-TV wall, and I watched every game of the tournament all weekend.
Didn't watch any golf? Didn't watch any?
No.
Ooh,
okay. Golf was unimportant. That's a non-tournament. No, I watched basketball. This is March. That's what I do. I watched every college game. I watched them all, and there were a lot of great coaching jobs. The San Diego State. I mean, look, they can play. I don't, you know, there's some teams that just had the Penn State. The guy at Penn State did a hell of a job. There were any number of terrific coaching. Chris Collins did a heck of a job.
Obviously, the Princeton guy did a great job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, this comes as no surprise that Izzo did a great job. I would say, watching that game, so did Shaka Smart. I mean, you know, these were guys playing chess and moving the pieces around and. They have my admiration, but so do a lot of people that, you know, maybe folks don't know, or they didn't watch that game. People in March, we watch a feature game, or they may have a certain team or their bracket. I'm not talking about brackets now. I'm talking about some teams that played some close games. The Kansas game that's the best game of the tournament. Who did Kansas lose to?
Arkansas.
My God, that game. Arkansas, are you kidding me? Musselman? Really? Really? Charles pointed out, Charles Barkley said going into the game, everybody in their studio, and it was Clark, and it wasn't Kenny, I don't know who was in the studio at the time, picked Kansas, and Charles said, you know, this Musselman guy, he knows what he's been doing since he's like 4 years old.
His dad was a coach.
His father knew what he was doing.
Yeah, his dad was a big coach.
And Eric, I mean, terrific coaching job. And so you got double-digit guys out there, man, who just knew what they were doing. So, no, I didn't pay attention to – I couldn't tell you. There were things going on in the world. And people like, you didn't know that, you know, you didn't know Hawaii had a snowstorm. No, I didn't know anything. I watched the tournament. That's all I did. That's all I'm going to do. I started up again on Thursday.
So you picked Gonzaga to win, I believe. They're still eligible. How do you feel about that now?
Tony, anybody could win or lose. Anybody. It's a lottery. Do I think that Gonzaga can still win? Sure. Do I think they're the best team? I don't know. It doesn't make any difference whether you think they're the best team or not. That's unimportant. Somebody Gonzaga has UCLA. Of course Gonzaga can lose to UCLA next.
Yeah.
Of course they can. They can beat them, but they can lose to them. And I like watching this kid, Drew Timmy, play. 6'11", 6'10", 6'11". He's a guy, he's been around for 130 years. He's like 23 by the time the draft comes around. Last night there was a play where Gonzaga's trailing and they need a basket badly, and you're used to guards controlling NCAA tournament games because that's what happens. And Timmy has the ball, and he's backing the kid down, and over his right shoulder, he shoots a left-handed with rotation off his fingertips baby hook shot that's all net, and it's closely guarded. And I was so glad whoever was doing the game made a big deal. And this will be, talk about the, my, a lot of my enjoyment from the tournament just comes with the people who are calling the games. Jimmy Jackson is one of my favorite people that I covered his whole life. I covered Jimmy Jackson, played, of course, at Ohio State. And then he played like 15 years in the NBA, and I got to know Jim Jackson real well. And he's now doing games, and he's fabulous doing these games. But Drew Timmy did this, and I'm like, that's Kevin McHale. No one knows what this is going to be. And I don't know if that was Jim Jackson's game, but somebody comes back and says, I'm going to date myself now and say that was a move straight out of the repertoire of Kevin McHale, and I start screaming. And so, you know, I don't know, Tony, if Gonzaga's the best team. Can they survive? Can Gonzaga win two more games to get to the Final Four? Of course they can.
Well, they've been there before, and they've been in the final game.
But can they lose the next game? Yeah, they
can. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Enjoy. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Tony.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we'll take a break. Chuck Culpepper will be with us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This one is called Nobody Wins. This is Tom Peabody, who must be Rufus Peabody's brother.
True, I guess.
Because this comes from Rufus Peabody's brother-in-law. It's a big family, the Peabodys. And Tom Peabody is looking for connections to venues and other musicians willing to share the stage in Richmond, Chapel Hill, Charlotte, and New Orleans. You can contact him at tompeabody.com. This is called Nobody Wins. There's a P.S. from PJ. That Indian city you named your dog after, Pune. I lived there for a summer in 2011. Nice place. And the Whoppers were definitely cheaper than at the Connecticut Avenue Burger King. How do we get these things? Michael, if PJ or Tom Peabody want to send us their original music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Simply unbelievable. Chuck Culpepper joins us now. I'm going to try and embarrass him as much as I can. I'm going to tell this story. I got a note the other day from Matt Rennie. Matt Rennie is an editor at the Washington Post. And Matt Rennie enclosed this clip to me. A lead that Chuck Culpepper had written on the Fairleigh Dickinson-Purdue game. Everybody remembers that there's only been, to that point, one team, the University of Virginia, that ever lost, proudly, on my standards, to an America East team, by the way, UMBC. Anyway, enclosed this clip. The dateline is Columbus, Ohio. The door to the quirky dungeon in which a Virginia team sat alone for 5 years suddenly, inexplicably, creaked open on Friday night, and a shaft of light streamed in, and in that light there appeared to be the best sight ever known to misery, company. And Rennie said, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chuck Culpepper. So just I hope you're embarrassed by that, that people just stand back and watch you write. And by the way, you struck gold. How did you happen to go to Columbus? What was the reason? Because you struck gold.
I'm embarrassed.
Good.
And I was trying to choose between Denver, Greensboro, and Columbus, and I was driving myself half mad and finally realizing this, it's a privilege. And then Jerry Brewer, our columnist, said, just shipped me a text and said, you have to go to Columbus. There's the most stories there, not knowing that, of course, that story was going to come out of it. But it had Tom Izzo, it had – fantastic Marquette team, you know, had it just looked like it had a few maybe extra possibilities that the others didn't. And then came something that nobody ever considered happening.
Where were you born and raised?
Around Suffolk, Virginia.
Okay,
Hampton
so you,
Roads area.
You will not know this because you're not born and raised in the New York metropolitan area. You will not know that Fairleigh Dickinson has always been referred to as Fairleigh Ridiculous. Always. By those of us who grew up there. Well, you're going to Fairleigh Ridiculous? Really? You couldn't get into a real school? What, it's a two-year school? Isn't it? So the notion, now I know some people who played there. Seth Greenberg on ESPN, his brother Brad played there at Fairleigh Dickinson. And they were coached for many years by a guy named Al LaBalbo. They're a pretty good basketball team. But they've got, if I have this correct, and they, you know, I'm not at all surprised that they didn't beat FAU. You know, I'm not surprised at that. But they have this huge, huge win over a number one. The number one, such a flawed number one. I said this 1,000 times last week. I've watched Purdue 4 or 5 times on television. They've lost every time. I would say to Wilbon, get off me with this team. They lose every single time. But I never thought they'd lose to Fairleigh Dickinson, where the tallest player is 5'6". Like, what did you make as you're watching that? What do you make of it?
I mean, Purdue has young guards, and that can really, you know, be a factor in March. And as I watched, I thought it was astounding how they got rattled, and then they got, you know, rickety, and then they got hopeless, all in this sort of sequence of when the ball would go down, when they would go down and look to score, you started to wonder how they might do it, even though they have a 7'4" player where you could throw it into him and maybe do it. But he was so hounded, a lot of those plays that, I mean, he got, 21 points and 15 rebounds. But he sort of, as the game waned, he sort of, him as a factor waned. So, you know, they just pestered them to pieces. So it was... Yeah, it was certainly odd to see. It was a little less odd that it was the second one. You know, we have seen this before, happened before. It had that feeling about it, you know, where, you know, it's not quite historic, but it was quite some experience.
Their coach is like a D2 or D3 guy,
right?
He's a guy who, you know, when you coach in D2 and D3, I'm sorry, you're not staying at the Ritz-Carlton. You know, you're driving a school bus to a lot of games. It's really different. I mean, he must have had the time of his life in the last couple of days, that kid. Well, he's not a kid, but he's, you know, to me, he's a kid.
He went through the list. He said, you book the hotels, you order the food, you know, you arrange the practice court times versus the women's basketball team and the volleyball team and so on. You do everything. It was really something to have a second round game coming up, as it was on happened on Sunday. So on Saturday we were listening to him and he was talking about stack. He kept saying stack and it meant STAQ, which is St. Thomas Aquinas, which is where he was coaching in Division II.
Yeah.
And then he started talking about inheriting a squad at Clarkson that had never. Hadn't won for a long, long time, and I think he won 24 games the first year.
It's
and that's
D3.
Division III.
It's D3. I know it because it's in Potsdam, where my friend Jimmy McSparron grew up and played basketball. And when you go to school in upstate New York, you know these names. This is D3 school. We were at D3 school when we were Harper College. If this guy had coached at Harper, I'd have blown my brains out. You know, I mean, and then he's playing FAU. FAU is in Boca Raton. This is the last place you'd ever think to be a college. Who's going to college in Boca? Stop. Everybody in Boca Raton is my age. Nobody's going to college there. It doesn't work that way. And what did they win, 31 on the year? Really?
Yeah, now they're up to 33-3.
Well, who are they?
Yeah, they're the Owls, which I love. And there should be more.
That's where Lane Kiffin coached football, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It sure is, and you know, that's where they have a coach named Dusty May, who went to Indiana, was a student manager under Bob Knight. Mike Davis, who then, you know, led that program to the title game in 02. He
lost
is
to
a
Maryland.
Mentor to him.
Yeah.
Lost to Maryland, right? And Mike Davis came into their locker room at some point this year to give him a talk and said, look, I think you're way, way up there. I think you're a Final Four caliber team because of the how they are really, really bonded. You know, you see these teams and they're bonded, and then there's some that are very bonded, and there's some that just seem extremely bonded, and that's kind of who they are. And as player Jonell Davis, who against FDU, which wasn't easy, FDU made a lot more of a contest of it than UMBC did against Kansas State in the second round after it beat Virginia. But this guy got 29 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 steals. Just fantastic in all facets, and you know, was not at all impressed with himself. So they've got Tennessee next, and they can win that. And then they're in the Elite Eight if they can do that.
That's right. And it's not even the most remarkable story, because the most remarkable story is Princeton. And they are.
Sure.
You know, Princeton is the most remarkable story.
Sure.
And because these guys, FAU, beat FDU. They were the favorites going in.
Right.
Princeton has knocked off two people. We go, really? Princeton. And those of us of a certain age, Chuck, remember Princeton Georgetown. It's one of the most famous losses in the history of the tournament. Remember Princeton Georgetown. And Princeton was always a team where you said to yourself, they've got a chance, right? They've got a chance. And they should lose by 30, and they won twice. What do you make of that?
Well, and remember they had that 43-41 win over UCLA in the first round?
Yeah.
1 year. And then we would say they've got a chance, and then we stopped saying that at some point. So the fact that they, you know, they, I think it's 59-55 over Arizona, and then 78-63 over Missouri. I guess it's something that Shaka Smart, the coach at Marquette, said on Saturday. He said, with these teams now who have these seeds like 15, and now we've had 3 straight years of 15 seeds in
winning
the Sweet 16.
That's right. There's been 11 of all time, and now this is Princeton was the 11th.
He said something has happened to the fear. The fear is completely gone, and they don't have the fear anymore. And I thought Missouri was a little bit vulnerable. Maybe I didn't think they would lose that game. And definitely not by the margin that they did. But I just guess that these teams, whereas in college football, which I follow, there seems to be less parity. In college basketball, there seems to be more all the time and more craziness. And, you know, we were within a few plays of having a 16 seed in the Sweet 16. It's a pretty close game last night for FDU and FAU. So, yeah, I think, I mean, Princeton, another example of one of these teams that just goes in and does not think of itself maybe the way the rest of us think of it, and does not think of itself as any kind of low seed. I think that the fear is gone, as he said.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then there's always the thing you can count on, that Tom Izzo is going to win some games. He's going to win some games. And they dismantled Marquette in the last 5 minutes of that game. Totally dismantled them. Marquette didn't know what it was doing out there, and Michigan State did know what it was doing. And then Tom Izzo was interviewed afterwards, because that's going to be in Madison Square Garden, right? Are you going to go to Madison Square Garden with them?
I'm not quite sure yet, but I think I might be in Kansas City, but I'm not completely sure, but I might.
Because Izzo said on air, I just want a big slice of pizza. You know, because I love Izzo. Everybody loves Izzo.
Everybody loves Izzo.
They do. All right, let's get to the overall question here. How can Alabama play these players? Does that seep through? Does all the scrutiny seep through and get to Alabama? Are they the third one out?
They've got to beat San Diego State in the regional semifinal in Louisville, and then they have to beat either Princeton or Creighton. We would think
it's a good draw.
Maybe we're making the same mistake. We think they should be able to do that. I don't see them losing. It's, they have too many mm-hmm. capabilities, too much flexibility. They have the thing you need for March, which is they can adapt to situations within games based on the talent they have and the skills they have and the length they have. So I don't see how they will not end up in Houston.
I'm not rooting for them. I'm not. I can't bring myself to root for them at this point. So, not everybody has to root for everybody.
I think a lot of people are very either cautious about rooting for them or just hoping it goes away.
Yeah,
it's a lot to ponder.
Their draw is a really good draw. But
when
they get into the Final Four and they have to win two tough games and they get asked these questions constantly and they stop answering these questions, you see what happens. They're college kids, they're not hardened pros. They're not 35 years old. They haven't been doing this for a long time. We will see. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chuck Culpepper. We'll be back with Email and Jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from the people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
1, 2, 3, 4. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Mr. Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of your folks.
Thank you to Greg Rosendahl and Lindsay Merrill for that. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes. Before I get to that, I just want to give a shout out to my goddaughter, Katie Robertson, who will be attending FAU as
Fantastic.
A freshman next year.
Yes. Fantastic.
I think she wants to get a master's at Ingleside after that.
Yeah, she'll be the youngest human being that she will see on the campus.
Bagel sandwiches. We got those today from Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, let us be lovers. We'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner's pies and walked off to look for America. It's Paul Simon. It's just brilliant. I wrote a paper about it in college. What can I tell you? Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon and Chuck Culpepper. Thanks to our sponsors, Rocket Money, Indochino, and Etsy. Remember that you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review.
It's great that Wilbon mentioned the crossing guard.
Yes. Yes. Wilbon. Okay. From Ross Idy, Gonzaga School of Law, 2004. I must be the only little who's an actual Gonzaga alumni. And no, I'm not talking about that little high school in D.C. I'm talking about the other Gonzaga that is in the other Washington. Over the years, I've built up a thick skin as you and Wilbon and nearly every college basketball expert dismiss Gonzaga as playing nobody, playing in a weak conference, not having enough good players, or the greatest indignity of all when someone on your show picked the number one seed Gonzaga to lose to the first round to a 16 seed. Yeah, Pablo Torre, I remember. That is why I've been a bit perplexed this year as yourself, Wilbon, Bob Ryan, and even Phil's mom have all picked Gonzaga to go to the Final Four, and some even picked the Zags to win it all. I mean, Wilbon is not surprised, but I am. And while I appreciate the national respect and attention for my little Jesuit school in the inland Northwest, I do have one request for you all. Stop jinxing us. If, and that is a big if it is Gonzaga's year, it's only because no one is paying any attention to them. So stop paying attention to them, and maybe, just maybe, they can do the impossible and win it all. Notice I said maybe, because I'm not going to jinx them. Thanks to you and the crew for all the good content. Brackets Week is great. Don't listen to anyone else and go Zags. From Jason Zweibel, I wonder if he's related to Alan Zweibel.
Oh,
in Lima or Lima, Ohio. I think it's Lima, not Lima, Ohio, but I'm not certain. Sunday, July 1st, 2012 was my 33rd birthday, and I head to the golf course. My standard weekend game is an ABCD blind draw best ball game. I was drawn with Todd and Denny Stump, an uncle and nephew pair, and I heard Denny say to Todd, "Hey, happy birthday." And Todd replies, "Same to you." Before I could utter a syllable, Doug Collins, our other teammate, not that Doug Collins, says, "Wait, it's your guy's birthday too?" At this point, we were forced to produce driver's licenses for proof. In a group of 20 guys, for there to be four with the same birthday is one thing, but to have one in each of the A, B, C, D categories drawn together on the day must be astronomical. If there's an official statistician of the show, they might actually be able to calculate these odds. That's actually not believable, that they all have the same birthday.
Seems a bit odd.
It's just not believable.
Yeah. Lima, Ohio, by the way.
Lima. Okay. From Ronnie Neumeier, our friend, Chuck and Roxy, episode number 190. In 1994, Bill Dano for the Starland Vocal Band and co-writer of Take Me Home Country Roads called to ask if my band, Soul Crackers, could perform at the White House for a reunion party hosted by President Bill Clinton for his 1968 Georgetown University classmates. Danoff, like Clinton, graduated from Georgetown in 68. They had a big graduation party and concert planned that year that was to feature Chuck Berry, the Drifters, and the Spinners. It was canceled in the wake of the assassinations and riots that in 1968. Once Clinton was elected president, he decided they would have the party under a huge tent on the White House lawn in the summer of 1994. Around that time, I had read a story in the Post that mentioned the last time Bill Clinton had a Washington address. It was while attending GU when he lived in a small group house at 4507 Potomac Avenue. Potomac Avenue is a small street off MacArthur Boulevard that overlooks Canal Road. I know this because from 1981 to 1984, my ex-wife and I lived next door to 4507 Potomac Avenue, where my Soul Crackers bandmates, Chuck Sullivan and Spencer Hoops, lived. In the same house Clinton had lived in 15 years earlier, but that's not all. After a year, my friends moved two doors away to a different house on Potomac Avenue with a basement where we formed Soul Crackers. A new group of folks moved into 4507. One of that group was a guy named John Hanrahan, who I knew slightly as a t-shirt vendor at rock shows. The afternoon of the June 1994 party at the White House, I had the chance to talk to Clinton during soundcheck, where he roamed around talking to Chuck Berry and then to our band. I mentioned him that my friends and he had both lived in the same house on Potomac Avenue in different decades. Clinton immediately said, 4507 Potomac Avenue, that place must be worth a lot of money today. Later that night, I was surprised to run into John Hanrahan, asked what he was doing at the event. He replied he was also a member of the same GU class of 1968. I realized then that four people had lived in the exact same house on Potomac Avenue at different times and were all at the White House party that night. Later that night, we backed up Chuck Berry, but that's another story. And he includes a picture
of
this.
That is wild.
Which is crazy, right? From Greg Newman, I think you're missing out on an incredible opportunity not to join the corporate speaking tour. Think about the appearance requests you could request. Your favorite ice cream softened to your enjoyment. A pair of new 990s waiting at each stop. Maybe a bowl of M&Ms, all one color, a Cher favorite, I'm told.
Yes.
Now, I know you're not in favor of being around a large group of people, but an added request of a Pope-mobile. Just without the moving parts could help that. Just picture the visual. If you added the old PTI turban, you would look like Zoltar from the movie Big. All the while, the crowd howls at your stories of Moses Malone's post-up game. It would be amazing. And then to finish each show, we could have local littles toss out red ball hats with white embroidery. Make America la Chisarita. Oh, the humanity. Greg is from Reno, Nevada, near Lake Tahoe, where there's lots of snow. So that's he's also the host and the producer of The House Detective. From Nicholas Nicholas Vamvas in Albany, New York. I call dibs on defecatory behavior is my bracket name this year. I didn't even get it. From Mark Schaefer, this is very interesting. On Wednesday's podcast, you read the name of an album called Simul Justus et Peccator and surmised correctly that it was Latin. It is a Latin phrase used by Martin Luther during the Protestant Reformation that means at once, simultaneously, justified and a sinner. It means that even though you're a miserable wretch of a human being, not you personally, but all of us, according to Luther, you are still nevertheless considered righteous by God and set for salvation. It is a statement of a long-established theological position about the both-and relationship between wicked human nature and divine grace. It has reappeared over the centuries, most recently as the Por qué no los dos? Why not both commercials for Taco Bell? Theologically yours, Mark. From Barry Spiegel in Peoria, Arizona. After sending my email, I headed for my shift at the Peoria Sports Complex for today's exhibition game between Team Canada and the Seattle Mariners. I'm normally in the press box, but today I was running the ball strike scoreboard from the press box. I spotted Dave Sims behind the glass in the adjacent booth, and I got an idea. I wrote this on the back of my Team Canada roster. Dave, a hearty lechiserie from a fellow Little. During a break between innings, Dave stood up for a moment, enabling me to show him the message. After reading it, he broke out into a big smile and clapped in joy. Meaning a big made my day. I only hope it made his. From Scott, Mike Huncho Abercrombie in Huntsville, Alabama. Team Spice Boys. These are the guys who cook. Team Spice Boys were once again victorious in the St. George Island, Florida charity chili cook-off this past weekend. Cooks from our team finished 1-2-3 last year. I only finished second this year, but our team leader, J.G. Mongo Fire Carver, finished first and has once again punched his ticket to the World Championship chili kickoff cook-off in Myrtle Beach at the end of September. I hope Wilbon is proud of us, but I'm sure he's not surprised. Michael, bring the in-laws and come say hello. Myrtle Beach, it's a long drive. From Kenny Ray, our friend Kenny Ray, in Fort Walton Beach in Florida. Shout out to Laura Little Tom Mosser, the artist who sent you the print of Dog at the Museum, the dog staring at the painting of a tennis ball that you displayed on PTI. I reached out to Tom to see if he could create a print of my dog Samantha, my daughter Samantha's dog Lucy. The photo of the dog and the drawing he made are attached. It's beautiful, isn't it? Thank you for sharing his work with us. He did this.
That's remarkable, isn't it?
It's just Tom Mosser.
Yeah,
how great
that's
is
talent
that?
Right there.
It's great. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But I still need a bit of milk, full fat, which I've warmed in the microwave.
I don't need a promise, you've stolen my heart. The path that we're taking, we don't need a chart. Know that you're waiting, but I don't need time. Oh, this love of mine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's moved to the country and wrinkled with age. Birds as our patrons, the land as our stage. You play the piano and I'll try to rhyme. Oh, this love of mine. I was looking for you in the spaces between all the words that I knew. The silence that comes when there's nothing to prove. We can be quietly right. Nothing out of the blue. 'Cause you have to admit that there's nothing new. And all of the feelings recycled in you. We'll knock on your door in the night. Maybe the hardest part is knowing where you stand. Think you're in the heart of a life that only just began. When it feels like time just won't stop pushing. Nobody wins.